Make May your month for big cash winnings at your favorite Washington Gold Casino. Stop by Club Hollywood Casino Shoreline and Royal Casino Everett and see how their guests are winning thousands in cash prizes. So why not make today your day to strike it rich? Washington Gold Casinos. So close, it feels like home.
All right, Brock and Saul continuing on here, 710 ESPN Seattle, 710sports.com. That's where you can find our on-demand podcast. It's, of course, driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealers, as is everything on our 710 Sports app. Yes, sir?
Mike, it was the end of April.
It sure
2009.
Was. 2009. Yes.
Our first year on the air.
Yes.
It was Lumberg 1, who I remember so vividly having this shape, and we used to shape the shows and have this whiteboard, and here's this topic, and here's that, and Lumberg in his vest and boots and jeans and everything else came down. And,
I'm a real boy.
And said, fool's gold? Is this fool's gold? Like, I want to have, you know, what do you guys think about this April for the Seattle Mariners? Because that was the last time it was this good. It was the last time they were at a 16-11 mark, and, you know, there were some veteran guys and some pieces here and there, and it must have been Wakamatsu and the whole belief system. And
Wakamojo.
Right? Is this fool's gold, or is there some substance behind a really good April? I think that's a legitimate question. In 2009,
which was
that was flawed. I mean, that was a team that took all the little parts and had to have, you know, career year from Russell Branyan and some things that kind of popped that year. This feels a whole lot more sustainable than that, mostly because the amount of pros in this lineup, Mike, and the damage it can do 1 through 9.
We just come back wins.
Oops, sorry about that.
Whoa, okay. We can play some Lumberg.
I thought I had Wakamojo, but it turned out to be something else. It's like 10. I don't even know what this is.
We just come back wins. We should start calling Wakamojo.
Oh. You've made Brock happy.
What do you think?
Wakamojo. You've made Brock clap.
That's how it all started. The great Wakamojo of 2009. That's not good.
Were we on walkie-talkie?
We may have been. That's where we can find John Morosi right now. He's MLB Network, of course, here in the Venue Kings Hotline, better known as a walkie-talkie. Hi, John. How are you?
I'm doing great. I thought you were saying that I was calling in all the way from 2009, which is quite a conversation.
Yes. Would have been very impressive. Time traveling and baseball writing all at the same time. All right, so the Mariners went out on the road, John. Since we've talked to you last, they went on a 10-game road trip and went 7-3 while they were on the road. What do we think?
I'm impressed. I think that one of the best things that we're seeing right now, actually two things that really stand out to me, is that number one, they've gotten healthy, which of course was not the case last year. Mitch Haniger has really replicated what he did last April in some respects, and then of course the injury happened and things just got sidetracked overall for the offense. But I like the healthy lineup and the bullpen depth. This is a team that is playing some tight games, but they're able to win them, even though the rotation hasn't quite been as steady as they wanted to. When you've got a bullpen that is this deep, and I think this settled in terms of the roles, I've been very impressed with the ability there of Scott Service to, obviously starting with Diaz in the ninth, but everybody's slotting in there. I think in games decided by the bullpen, they're 6-2 this year, which tells you a lot about their abilities late in the ballgame. So lineup health, bullpen stability has so far, I think, won the day over what's been a pretty inconsistent starting rotation.
You know, John, it was 2 weeks ago. You were in Puerto Rico. We were talking about Eddie Diaz and what he means in that community and everything else. 2 weeks later, I'm curious, who do you think was the most impressive Mariner in the month of April?
It's tough because you're comparing Haniger and Diaz, but to me, I think Diaz, we talked about what an elite closer he is now. He's going to the All-Star game, in my judgment. I think that's where he's headed right now. The consistency that he's brought to that role has been extraordinary. So I would say Diaz has had if I was going to crown the MVP of this team so far, I would probably lean Diaz. I think Haniger, obviously, every day has been there, and he may well be an All-Star himself. But I just think for what the way Diaz has impacted the entire bullpen, he gets a slight edge for me over Haniger, but I think both will be very, very good choices.
You think they're both All-Stars? I mean, look at Haniger's numbers right now, just for April. Hit .309, .394 on base percentage, a .701 slugging, 10 home runs, 27 driven in. Those are pretty absurd numbers. And then you mentioned Diaz, 11-for-11 in save opportunities. He's only allowed 2 hits and a run all year.
I think they're both going. And I'll say this. When we talk about Mitch Haniger and what he has done, consider this perspective for all the major leagues. Only 3 players so far have a slugging percentage above .700. Didi Gregorius, Mookie Betts, and Mitch Haniger. I mean, and Didi and Mookie have really, I think, been probably the two big guys we talked about a lot about the early season MVP discussion for whatever it's worth. Obviously, Red Sox, Yankees, what we know about the way that players on those teams tend to dominate the national discussion. But again, by the numbers, Haniger belongs right with them. He has been, in that respect, I think every bit as fearsome offensively. And I just love the overall game that he brings. He walks a lot. He's on base a lot. Just everything that he has done has really added a whole another layer of productivity to this entire lineup. So I think if you're talking about Didi and Mookie, if you had an MVP ballot, I think which goes 10 players deep, I think for the whole league, I think Haniger has to be on there right now.
John Morosi of the MLB Network here with us. What is the number, John, for you? What is the point? What's the first mile marker, the number of games played, where you look at and say, okay, this is a pretty good body of work here to make some judgment to really project moving forward?
40 games, of course, is being a Michigander, growing up with Sparky Anderson. Sparky always said it's 40 games, which, you know, puts you right around a little before Memorial Day. That sounds about right to me. I think that if you're sustaining success and you're above 500 and you're a pretty healthy ball club by the end of May, then I think you're probably going to be a contender. And it was interesting, Brock. I looked it up, and here we are on the 1st of May. Last year, all 10 teams that made the playoffs had winning records on May 1st, all 10. So this maybe is a bit of an alarming bit of news for if you're a fan of the Dodgers or the Nationals or the Twins, all of whom are under 500 right now. But, again, I think in this two-wild-card era, we see it so often that if you're finishing the year at 84 wins, 85 wins, 86 wins, if you're not in the playoffs, you're darn close to it and probably in the playoff discussion in the second half of September. So that tells you that if you're around 500, then you are in position to make a run. And I think for the Mariners, when your bullpen is as good as it is and when your lineup is as deep as it is, you may be that one more starting pitcher away, depending on how things go, tweaking your team there in July. And sources indicate Jerry DePoto is not exactly bashful about making trades, okay? So I think we all know that. So if this team is in position in July, I would expect Jerry to be as involved as any GM in those really important discussions. So if I'm a Mariner fan right now, I'm really optimistic about where this team sits right now.
All right, well, let's go there because Brock and I started some of that conversation earlier today. Let's fast forward a couple of months. The Mariners continue at this pace, winning at a, you know, roughly 600 clip or something like that. There's a couple of other really good teams they're battling, the Angels and Astros in their own division, Red Sox, Yankees, and Blue Jays certainly in the AL East. There's only going to be spots enough for a few of those teams. How all in can they go? Who will be available as a starting pitcher at that point? And do they have enough in a pretty depleted farm system to go get one?
Right, and that's a very good point about the depleted farm system. I think that one thing I would say is this: the Mariners are they're creeping closer to the luxury tax threshold, but I think they can add a pretty substantial pitcher and not worry about it. And that is not true for a lot of other contenders, like for example the Dodgers. The Yankees, potentially, depending on where they go with their rotation. So I think the Mariners, their ability to take on payroll, when you look at their strategic benefit and competitiveness, if they were going after a Cole Hamels, for example, although Cole has not had a great start to the season, someone of his ilk, maybe even a Mike Minor, I realize, again, it's the same division, but names like that, the cash has to be one of their big attributes in going after these players. Whereas the Dodgers may say, hey, listen, we'd love to have this guy, but you're going to have to take on all the money because we don't want to have to go above the luxury tax threshold. The Mariners are far enough below it that they can probably take on that money and be comfortable with it. So I think you look back to the offseason, and there was a reason why they pursued Ohtani as well as they as hard, as seriously, and as authentically as they did, because they wanted that other top-end pitcher. They still have that need. I would mention the Rays as well as a team that we'll see how they go. They've actually won 9 of 10, so they're not looking to sell right now, but I think names like Archer, Blake Snell, who, of course, is from Shoreline, is worth keeping an eye on there. Of course, many years of control, so the price tag is going to be very high. But I think those are names, those are the types of teams, the Rays, the Rangers, maybe the Tigers with a Michael Fulmer. Matthew Boyd, also a Seattle area native. So I think those are all names to keep in mind.
John Morosi of the MLB Network. I think Salk was being nice to me this morning. And, John, feel free, like John Bon Jovi style in a blaze of glory, to shoot me down here. But I just have this feeling. I watched the Yankees of 2017. I watched them last year. I think they came in and swept the Mariners, in fact. And I remember thinking about that team and looking at that lineup. It's Gary Sanchez. This is last year. And Carter and Castro and Headley and Gardner and Ellsbury. And I look at that lineup and I compare it to this lineup. Now with D. Gordon and Healy and top to bottom and the Zanino that's found himself. From a lineup standpoint, I think both did incredible damage. From a starting rotation standpoint, they needed an infusion of arms at the All-Star break. Am I crazy to look at this 2017 Mariner team or 2018 Mariner team and see some resemblance to the 2017 Yankees?
I think that there are some similarities. I wouldn't say they're exactly the sort of on that same, maybe that same caliber, but it's the Mariners are closer now to that level than they've been in a while. So Brock, I am not going to dismiss your statement. My friend, we are on very similar pages here. And again, I think if they're able to get that one big starter, I think it just that helps the rest of the rotation settle back into those roles. I think Felix, we watch him, and of course he pitches again today. We know certainly he's not that elite Cy Young caliber guy he's been in the past. He's I think pitched in some respects. He's maybe outpitched what some of his metrics because he's that veteran savvy still comes into play for him. He's able to, I think, have some success because of that. But there's no question that as you look at this team and project it going forward, if they want to make a serious run, and if even if you concede the division may be difficult to win because the Astros rotation is just so extraordinary, do I think that the Mariners can pitch as well as the Angels? And I think they can. I really think they can. And so that's where there may be one more pitcher away from being able to do that. And I'm a believer. I'm a strong believer. I've said it for a number of years that playoff baseball was coming back to Seattle. I sort of did the reverse mojo and said, you know what, I'm not going to pick them this year, which of course means they're going to make it. So far, my reverse psychology with my family ties to Seattle, I'm pleased with how things are going so far.
Can they pitch well enough to not just deal with the Astros or the Angels, though, but the three teams or two of the three teams in the AL East?
Well, and that's a very good point. And that's where, you know, they look at the Blue Jays and, of course, Stroman with his struggles early in the year. Maybe they're a bit more vulnerable. But you're right, Mike. That's going to have to be the conversation. As you start doing the math, okay, if it's going to be one wild card team out of the East, then you have to find a way to sort of win the other one coming out of the West. So I think they can. I think the Red Sox and Yankees are really in a unique spot right now. The Red Sox, they've really reformulated their lineup with bringing in J.D. Martinez, and Mookie Betts has been so dynamic out of the leadoff spot. But I think, can they be better than one of those two teams, Red Sox or Yankees? That may be a bit of a stretch, but the good thing is they don't have to be in the regular season. They can still get that second wild card. And I think right now they're very well positioned for a run at that second wild card spot.
It's good stuff, man. It's fun talking about it. And it's nice to be having these conversations. It's going to be this isn't last year where the American League had the second wild card was going to be a couple games over 500. Mm-hmm, you've got a real. I mean, I don't even know whether Cleveland's all that good, but even if you take them out of it, you've got five or six teams that sure seem to be battling for those spots. And it's nice to see the Mariners at least included in the conversation right now with Houston, LA,
and every team in the American League Central has a negative run differential right now. That division, I realize I'm a Midwesterner here, they may be receding from the conversation a bit outside of whatever team wins the division. So it's all about East and West, and I like where the Mariners are right now.
John, awesome to catch up with you. We'll do it again in a couple of weeks. You can, of course, see John MLB and MLB Network and read him at MLB.com. Thanks, man. We'll talk soon.
I'm sorry that I didn't know Spanish today. I feel badly about that. I failed to come through with some Spanish things, but 2 weeks time I'll be there, okay?
All right, Lydia's crushed. I can see her right now. She's very upset.
My apologies, Lydia. Lo siento.
Okay, there you go. Bye, John. John Morosi with us every other Tuesday at 9 o'clock.
I was going to say adios, but that would have been very inappropriate, so I could not do that.
No, that's not appropriate.
I do think of two things, though.
Yeah.
There are two names that come to mind through that 15-minute conversation, and the first one is James Paxton. And the fact, Mike, that we are sitting here at 16-11 with this team and that he has not pitched more than six innings in any of his outings this year, that if we're going to have any legitimate conversation moving forward about this team and or in this race and where he was to be and the steps forward, you know, that's what, six starts and he's not gone beyond
six
innings. Yeah,
I would agree. He had a rough month, I think is how I would look at it. And he's entitled to a rough month, especially when the team played pretty well other than that.
Yep.
But at some point, if you want to compete, you need James Paxton to be who he was last year.
And, you know, he's still averaging seven strikeouts a start. I mean, you're still at 44 strikeouts, so the stuff is there, but it's a consistency. It's keeping a pitch count at a place where you can get extended, where it's giving this doggone bullpen, as good as they've been, some breather at some point. you know, because Felix is going to be hard-pressed to do that. Leek's going to be hard-pressed to do that. You know, Marco, I think, is going to be hard-pressed to do that. You got to be the one to carry some of that. Mm-hmm. And then equally, as much as we talk Diaz and Haniger, as we should, what D. Gordon has meant to this team is, I mean, I'm looking at the war numbers here, and it's obviously Haniger, and it's Cano, and then it's D. Gordon right up there. And the war is not even representative of it.
Yeah.
It is his swag. Right, it's some of what we've talked about the last couple days of the emotion and the Shaquem Griffin and just like a guy that loves to play ball. I mean, he just there's no pretense about it. There's nothing phony about it. It's just I love to play, man.
Yeah.
I love to play, and it is so infectious, I think, to some of the others.
You know, coming back to Paxton, if you start looking at the numbers, and I'm not going to do a deep dive or anything, there's really only one thing that has been off for him this year, and that's just his control.
Yep.
It's just the walks.
Yep.
I mean, look, he's striking out more batters than he ever has in his career. 12.5 per nine would be the highest of his career by a couple. You know, the hits are roughly in line with what he's been giving up. The difference is the walks. He in his career, he has averaged 2.8 walks per nine innings,
yep.
And right now he's averaging 4.3. If you're looking for why James Paxton has not been Paxton yet,
yes.
It's just that.
Yep.
He's just walking too many guys. Get rid of the walks, and he's going to be just fine. And so I'll take him long-term. I think he's going to be okay. But yeah, you're right. That's something you could really, really use.
Gosh, how much fun has D been, honestly?
Super fun.
I mean, how much fun through 27 games? I think we anticipated seeing some of that. But, you know, leading the league again in stolen bases, just being that pest out there. Four hits the other day, as Lydia referenced. And just that fun factor that he has brought. You know, I was talking to somebody the other day, because Monday Night Football, I think, is going to make an announcement, and I'll get a little more info on that here sooner than later, and there's been rumors about Witten, and, you know, can Witten really come right from the field? And I think in a copycat nature, they look at Tony Romo, you know, and I said, you know what Tony Romo did better than anything else? Yes, he got some of the plays and the formations early, and that was all wonderful, and that started to die down as the year went on, but you know what he really did? He brought out Jim Nance. Like, over the course of the season, like, he brought to life, like, a little bit of, like, just edge and personality and Nance in the back. It was just, like, kid-like. Romo's, like, blurting stuff out and just has this charisma.
He would
right?
even ask Nance questions and make Jim make a call.
Exactly.
Jim, what do you think they're going to do here?
Yes.
I don't know. I've been doing this for 37 years. Nobody's right? ever asked me before.
And don't you think, in some way, like, Cano is still Cano cool. And, and Segura is doing his thing. And these are a group of pros. But if there was any guy that you could bring into the mix for maybe a time spent in this league and just personality that could bring out just a little bit more, it is D. Gordon.
Yeah.
It is D. Gordon. And transitioning to center field and all that he's brought, man, he has been just, a blessing these first 27 games.
So we'll see. A big homestand now for the Mariners as they have 7 games, first 3 with Oakland, then 4 with the Angels. Going to be beautiful weather. Great time to get out to the park and support this group. I think you love what the you love what the bullpen has done so far. The lineup is as deep as anybody's in baseball. The question is going to be that rotation. And after the last couple of starts from Erasmo, I'll just kind of put a little, what's your little dentist thing? The little watch list went from the dentist.
Don't encourage this, Mike.
I know.
I think
it.
Renee was listening to the show or someone told her. She didn't even do it. I got my teeth cleaned the end of last week, and I'm waiting for 222. 232.
Thank God.
334.
God, it's annoying.
332.
I'm sorry. Kyle, this one's
nothing.
On me. It's totally my fault.
Why?
Nothing.
But if I could just get a little watch list on Erasmo.
Yeah, we got a pocket.
Who just hasn't,
we got a 221 on Erasmo?
He just has not looked the same since coming back. The fastball velocity's down. He's getting hit around. And
are
usually
we a 9-1-1?
Just when a guy comes back from an injury.
I think Lloyd kept Erasmo.
That's
on
for
9-1-1.
Sure. When a guy comes back from an injury like that and doesn't look the way he's looked before.
Yeah.
Decent chance he ends up going right back onto the DL with the same injury or something similar. Great. So I'm just going to have a little watch list on Erasmo. And if that's the case, this pitching rotation's not.
Well, you wanted Miranda anyway. You wanted Miranda ahead of Erasmo.
Erasmo Ramirez is a guy you can lose.
Erasmo.
Very replaceable pitcher.
Erasmo.
It's not that you can't lose Erasmo. It's just that you don't have a lot of depth in your rotation.
Yeah, but from Erasmo to the next guy feels pretty
good. I would agree with that. I think whether you end up going with Miranda or LeBlanc or even Bergman, I don't know that that's I don't know if that's a gigantic drop-off from what you get from Erasmo.
Right.
The problem comes when what happens when you have one more? What happens when somebody else has a minor nagging thing and hits a 10-day DL, and now you're 2, 3, 4? four down the road.
And they definitely don't have one through five the top end talent, but they do have one through eight quadruple A starters. They have quadruple A starter after quadruple A starter.
Two, three, two. And Dr. Hager, we got a pocket here.
You notice the Yankees have won 9 of 10?
Yeah.
Aren't they infuriating? Remember before when they were like right at 500? You're like, oh, maybe this whole thing will. Oh, my God, they've won 9 of 10. Yes. Those SOBs. They are just the most obnoxious thing. Their team is so stacked. Offense, pitching, defense,
you
got
a feel for baseball 27 games in? You know, we're just about at that far. It's amazing how fast
they
start
in the American
to get gobbled
League.
Up.
I think the teams in the American League have separated themselves really quickly. You've got three very good teams in the American League East, Boston, New York, and then Toronto sort of a step behind them. And then Tampa, we'll see, and Baltimore's a bad team. I think we can tell that the AL Central's not good. And we've seen Cleveland now for seven games, haven't been too impressed.
Nope.
And the rest of that division is significantly worse.
We saw the White Sox, Kansas City.
I'll be really interested to see at the end of the year what Cleveland's record is versus their own division versus the rest of the league.
Okay.
And I'll be willing to bet that they end up making the playoffs with being sub 500 or right around 500 against everyone other than the rest of the AL Central, which stinks.
Yep.
We think we know what we know here in the West, with Houston as the best team in baseball, and then, you know, the Mariners and Angels are going to sort of slug it out behind them, and Oakland and Texas aren't really up for it this year. And so, you know, as opposed to last year where the American League was all sort of compressed towards the middle, I think you're seeing some real haves and have-nots, and that's where this whole tanking conversation comes in. Is Texas really trying to win this year? No. Is Kansas City, Chicago, no, not really. Minnesota, maybe. And they've screwed all that up, and that's a mess. Detroit's not really trying to win. Baltimore's not really trying to win. I mean, these teams are trying to play down, lower the payroll, and get into the draft and try to get back on top that way.
Yeah, well, I'll spin that again to a positive. This team will answer this. We do not have to answer it May 1st, a happy May 1st day, May Day. We don't have to answer it today. This team is going to answer it through this month of May, where they get a lot of home cooking, and then they're going to answer in the early part of June, right? And they're going to answer it against the Houston and some of those other teams. They're going to tell Jerry and tell Scott and the rest of them, and if they're 10 over at the end of May, Mike, isn't there some advantage to all these teams tanking? That it, you know, instead of that line of everybody's compressed and everybody feels like they're in it, instead you got five programs that are just out. Five or six that are all out, and they want to sell some of their goods. Shouldn't that be a bit of a buyer's market? Shouldn't there be some opportunity?
You would think that there would be some teams looking to sell. The question is whether or not they're willing to sell for just money, or whether or not you need to give up the prospects. Because I just don't. I think their farm system is so depleted, they're just not going to be able to go out and get some of those frontline guys that you would like to see them acquire. So we'll see. All right. Anyway, that's where we're at. My bad. I said there was a seven-game homestand. It's only six. Three with the A's, three with the Angels. I thought it was a wraparound. Oh, that's my bad.
You're better than that.
I am. You would think so. Yes. It turns out I'm not. Thanks to the text machine for keeping me honest. Much appreciated. You can always text in 710-710, powered by Coors Light. Answer the question, Jerk, coming up here in 20 minutes. Before we do so, Brock, I want to come back to what the Seahawks have done and the holistic approach that has led us to where we are today. It's next. I'm Brock and Salk.
Heritage Distilling's BSB Lounge at the ballpark. Award-winning spirits, including BSB and BSB 103. Brown sugar bourbon at 103 proof. Throw your tongue the heater. You can't spell baseball without the BSB Lounge. Heritage Distilling Company, proud sponsor of your Seattle Mariners.
Text message 710-710, powered by Coors Light. Jerks, every time I hear that techno flute on the promo you play, my heart hurts. No more Luke Wilson, no more Techno Tuesday, no more short shorts. It's an interesting point. My heart does not hurt.
Let's play it.
I mean, it was Nick Van Atte that came up with it.
That's
so
true.
We can't just totally disregard it.
But I think you actually bring up a really interesting point that reflects back, Brock, to where you and I were earlier today. And talking about some of the disconnect that has occurred between the fan base and this team over the course of the last few years, and why you and I are so jazzed up about what they've done this offseason.
Yep.
Last year, we were so desperate to reconnect with the Seahawks that it was all about the tight end room playing techno. It wasn't about Richard Sherman and Michael Bennett and Russell Wilson, and obviously Marshawn Lynch by then was gone. It was about Nick Vinette and Luke Wilson playing the techno.
Something to feel good about.
That's right.
Because as you said, was it David that was the hospital administrator that had to deal with all the egos out there?
Yes.
Because we had to kind of lie to ourselves, and when we talked to other people, say, no, nothing has changed. It's great, man, and Pete, we trust still, and this team still trusts, but we knew deep down it wasn't.
We liked it. Like, it was fun. Techno Tuesday was definitely fun, but the most fun part of last year's team was a couple of tight ends who could barely get deals around the league?
Right.
Come on.
Look, that goes to Nick Finette. He put together a wild playlist. It was very intense. Like, we kind of had to ease our way into the more intense techno songs.
That's like being upset that Munenori Kawasaki got a job somewhere else and he's gone now.
Right.
Like, when that's the only thing you can look at, then your team's just not good enough. And you're not connecting with them the way you should be. That should be an extra bit part. And instead, it became the focal point last year, because what else were you going to focus on? Everything else was sort of painful. Nothing else felt right. It was all an awkward fit. It was round pegs, yeah, square holes, and all that.
And you know what? This wasn't just like, they didn't just tear down the remodel, like they tore it all the way down to the studs.
Mm-hmm.
And they did what we have asked, you know, at times the baseball team to do. Like, from their perspective, Mike, they went into that hole in January and they had a month that they never had over the last 6 years. And they said, what are we going to do? Can we go halfway? Can we just fire Daryl and keep Tom? Can we fire Tom and keep Daryl? Can we? Nope, can't do it, man. Got to. Well, if we fire them, what about Chris Richard? And is that nope.
No, let's just move on.
I mean, seriously. I mean, that is as big a house clean as you could possibly do from that perspective.
Agreed.
And then they went to the players. Well, can we keep Richard? You know, he's in the final year of his deal. We know his injuries hit. Nope. Michael, nope. Cliff's probably going to retire. Nope, nope, nope. We can't go halfway.
So which of those things mattered most? And we asked you guys that in a little poll last night, and Brock retweeted it this morning, about 3,200 votes. 47% think the assistant coaching changes will be the biggest positive impact on the team this year. Another 26% say losing Sherman and Bennett and Jimmy Graham, et cetera, will have the positive effect.
Mm-hmm.
And then another 25% say the draft class, and 2% only say free agent signing. So, you know, as people have looked at this, Seahawks fans are saying the biggest change will be because of the coaches.
Well,
and I got to agree with you. Now, I think the whole thing ends up working together to make a lot of sense, but I'll agree. We're moving on from Daryl Bevel, moving on from Tom Cable, and moving on from Chris Richard, I think that will have the biggest positive change.
I mean, why this isn't kind of like Lydia's polls, why they're not hashtag epic, is because I could actually argue for three of these. Right? An epic poll,
I think that's
is,
what actually makes
nah,
it epic.
An epic poll is one that is so divided, so emotional. I couldn't fake it. I couldn't argue for the other ones. I think in this one, I could actually legitimately make a case that this new blood coming in, that you could have done all the other stuff, but if you did not have this new blood coming in, that you did not have the running back you wanted, but you got the fourth running back, that you did not get the punter, but you got the third punter, you didn't get the best blocking tight end, you got the fourth best. Like, this draft could have been muted, right? It really couldn't. Or you didn't get Shaquem, and he ended up going to Atlanta, one pick before you, and just kind of kicked you again right in the gut. Like, I think I could argue and say, no, it is enormous that they got this huge piece of the puzzle in this new young blood. Throw in some undrafted free agents that we know, more than likely, one of them is going to become Jermaine or Doug or some, you know, real stud contributor to this team. Who knows? Maybe even a core player.
So why isn't it epic if you can make an argument for all of them, but it's hard to choose?
Because it's all holistic. It's all divided. It's all the plurality
because
of it.
He doesn't
Mike.
Have the passion.
Yes.
Mike.
Yeah. I mean, if I can make a case for each of them and there's so much plurality.
That's a different kind of poll.
Yeah, that's fine. And it's a great poll. I'm not.
Yeah, it's kind of different
it's
kind.
It's just not hashtag epic. And then I know Kyle in Howdy.
It's not hashtag epic, Kyle, because I didn't force people to try to choose the answer
right.
I wanted them
that's
to.
That's exactly right.
It wasn't a leading.
Maybe that's true.
It's not hashtag epic because it wasn't designed to make it seem like everybody loves the Huskies.
Maybe it's hashtag elitist, okay, because these are all great answers. No, these are all super terrific answers that you
Now it's an elitist poll.
Yes. Now, Kyle, you voted, actually, and I think Howdy, talking to you, you guys feel like it is the players moving out.
Yeah, I could see that being either positive or negative, that those players being gone. I could argue either way that
that's going to help. So let me ask you straight up. Michael, that's really those three guys, right? Michael Bennett, Richard Sherman, and Jimmy Graham. Are the Seahawks better or worse for those three guys leaving?
They are much better in the long term and probably worse next year. That's how I feel. And I don't think that the Seahawks are on a Super Bowl trajectory with those guys leading against the direction of the team.
Yes.
I don't think that you can get back and win a Super Bowl with the direction being split. But next year, you're definitely not going to win, in my opinion. So in the future, if everyone's moving in the same direction, I can believe
so
it.
So you think they're closer to winning their next Super Bowl, but it won't necessarily mean or matter in 2018?
Yep.
Kyle, what
I
do you
agree
think?
With that.
Fully agree with that. I think they lost a lot of good talent, good players. That's going to lead to this team taking a step back next year. But that long-term redeveloping, reestablishing the culture of Pete right, Carroll, so, John so, Schneider, and yeah, not of those
but
guys.
Brock, one, it sounds like you agree with that,
I do,
and I come pretty close, too. So that you have to then ask the next question. Why didn't you trade Earl Thomas for a third-round pick?
Because he's not one of those guys pulling in the other
but
direction.
He's not going to be
because
here after,
philosophically,
but
he's
not
going to
be here
right
after
right.
that year.
Right, philosophically,
but he's not going to be here after this year.
But he will get in the canoe and do the J-stroke. Okay,
I agree with that.
He will do
but
that.
But if he's not going to be here after that year, don't you want to take whatever you can get for him?
I think he'll be here on the franchise tag in 2 years. Okay. And legitimately, you should be back on the Super Bowl wagon in
fair.
2 years.
All right. If that's your argument, you think that it's going to be a franchise tag situation, I guess I can
Yeah, and I do think. I'm not going to let this year just squash the compensatory pick.
Mm-hmm.
I do think if he has a really good year and he's going to get paid elsewhere, you know, handsomely, then I think there still is that opportunity to get a third or fourth round compensatory pick. Now, there's one giant, enormous if in all of this and everything that you just discussed there and the beautiful logic that you may be closer to the next one, even if you take a step back. And that huge if is Russell Wilson. If Russell is aboard and Russell's people are aboard and Russell feels like, yeah, I want to commit to this.
He should.
I don't know.
Are you kidding? If Russell Wilson doesn't like what the Seahawks have done this offseason, I don't know what to tell him. This whole offseason has been all about helping him. He gets a new offensive line coach who should hopefully be able to protect him. He gets a new offensive coordinator who is hopefully going to save him by not making him run around and protect himself with all the passing. He gets a tight end who can block a running game that should work, a running back. He should love that. A punter that's going to keep the other team deep.
He should.
What possibly wouldn't he like about this?
Jermaine Ifedi still right tackle. And
we don't know that Jermaine Ifedi is the right tackle.
The
you know that a bunch of guys are going to compete for
Amara
right tackle.
That Amara Darbo and Jerron Brown can't separate and they don't make plays and they don't catch the 50-50 balls, that he doesn't have a weapon that caught 10 touchdowns.
If Russell Wilson thinks those are the things that he needed in order to be successful, he didn't pay any attention to having Jimmy Graham or any attention to the way his career trajectory
was. I'm not arguing that. I argued yesterday and said that this draft puts Russell in some of the best place moving forward.
I don't know what to tell him.
But they have to be able to run the ball. If he hands it off, Mike, and Aaron Donald's 3 yards in the backfield with Brockers and with the whole rest of that crew, and they cannot run, and they cannot sustain a run game, and all of a sudden you get one more injury to one of these backs, whether it's ProSize, Carson, or something, and like, yeah, we still can't run. I mean, but
in terms of what they've done this offseason, it was done to try to fix the running game.
It was.
And so whether it works or not remains to be seen. This is not a conversation about whether it works.
Well, that is
it's
to
a
be seen.
Because
and if you're
we
Russell,
don't know whether it works
and
yet.
If you're Russell and it is to be seen.
Well, then
seen,
he can say that about everything. I mean, if that's your argument, then you can say it about everything. Oh, well, it depends. Well, we'll wait and see. Well, if that's the case, then he...
Oh, I'm just saying after
you
this season.
If they went out and got the 5 best wide receivers available,
nope.
You'd say, well, we'll wait and see. Because
I'm saying after this season, and let's just say this run game doesn't, because this doggone division is really good, and the
right.
Rams are excellent, and trying to block Ndamukong Suh and Aaron Donald and Brockers.
And all of those things. But if Russell Wilson doesn't like the... Because the only thing you can judge right now is the philosophy behind what they did. If he doesn't like the philosophy behind what they did, then I don't know what to tell him.
Yep.
This is all designed to make him a better player in 2018.
Take some of the burden off of him. It's not healthy for you to be the leading rusher. You can't sustain taking the kind of pounding you take. We want
right.
to take some of this off of you. But it's got to take steps in that direction, Mike. I mean, that's my point. It's got to show some life in that. Mike Solari's got to show that he can get these guys on the same page. Dwayne Brown's got to be extended. One of these backs has to hit mm-hmm. and be able to play for 14 games and actually do it and take some of that burn off. You're right. I think philosophically, I would argue right there with
he
you.
He should love this.
He should. But ultimately,
if he looks at when he's had the most success, it was when he handed the ball off a ton to Marshawn Lynch. He was able to keep the ends honest by read option and everything that he did in order to slow down the pass rush.
Yep.
And he had the quote-unquote pedestrian receivers that he kept finding a way to get the ball to.
But ultimately,
he should love this.
Ultimately, as Bob Stelton says, and Bob Gros and Tom, and points to that offensive line time and again, can they gel together? Because for Russell to move forward,
yep.
he has to have that O-line
yep.
be somewhat of a semblance
you've
of what they were when he
You've
got to
believe that
began.
Dwayne Brown was a major help,
yep.
and you've got to believe that a new offensive line coach and some different philosophy will be enough. And by the way, hopefully an offensive coordinator that will truly commit to them and keep giving them the chance to
Love
succeed.
It. Love
so,
it.
I like it. You got to take everything together, but I really enjoy what they've done so far
That's
this offseason.
That's the plurality of it.
That's exactly
yeah,
right.
Sure
All right.
Is.
710-710 powered by Coors Light. That's the number to text. Here's how it goes. You text us. We'll answer your questions, any question on any subject next on Brock and Salk, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Hey, Brock Hewitt here for Toyota Puyallup. You know, when you're shopping for a new vehicle, you want the best value and to be treated fairly. You want confidence that the dealership will be there long after the sale. Well, Toyota Puyallup is Washington's most awarded Toyota dealer for customer satisfaction, and they've been doing it for almost 50 years. Toyota Puyallup has more than 700 new Toyotas for you to choose from and one of the largest selections of Toyota trucks in the Northwest. Plus, they all come with 2 years of complimentary maintenance. So go see Carrie and her team at Toyota Puyallup, putting you first since 1970.
Hey, this is Bob Stelton from the Bob Gross and Tom Show. I want to thank you for listening to the Brock and Salk Show. And you know what would be fantastic is if you checked out the Bob Gross and Tom Show every day from noon to 3. You can stream us live at 710sports.com or on the 710 Sports app or listen on demand.
This is Brock and Salk. Answer the question, jerk.
Keep asking questions. Come on, I'll answer them. Come on, I'm here. I'm going to answer your questions, dang it.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
Well, don't just stand there. Answer the question, jerk!
All right, let's answer these questions. 710-710, powered by Coors Light. You send us questions, we answer them. It's Brock and Salk here at 710 ESPN Seattle. Jerks, popcorn, or Skittles when watching an intense game?
Popcorn. Yeah, popcorn.
I don't like Skittles.
Skittles makes your mouth kind of dry, all sugary.
How many can you eat?
And you need that charcoal pill to get all the toxins.
All right, so I have sort of a gross confession for you.
Oh, you do?
Do we need that?
A little bit.
Do we?
So yeah. Saturday,
let me tell you,
you guys can decide whether it's gross or not. Saturday, I took the ferry to Bainbridge Island. And on the ferry, went over to the restaurant with a couple friends. We got a couple beers for the ride over and got a bag of popcorn. Two bags of popcorn. Be clear. Ate one of them. The other bag kind of came with us, and it apparently was left in the backseat of my car about two-thirds full.
Okay.
When some of my friends got out of the car the other day. Okay, fine. I didn't realize that until this morning when I went to go put Avery's car seat back in, and I found the bag of popcorn on the floor.
Right.
This was at 5:45, 5:50 this morning.
Yeah.
So I picked up the bag. I was like, I'm going to throw this out now while I'm actually near my compost. So I brought it over to the compost. So I tried it.
Yeah, you ate it.
So this is now...
It was like wrapped up in a bag?
No, just in a bag. Open bag on Saturday.
On the floor.
Okay. 3 days popcorn.
Yeah.
How do you think it was?
I'm like an avocado. I'd slice the top layer off. I would kind of dump out the very top layer.
And then
of the
you think
popcorn.
It's fine?
Yeah, and then I go in.
Yeah, I think you're fine to eat shouldn't that. Maybe a little stale.
Shouldn't
but,
it be totally stale by 3 days later? It was not.
No, it'd be fine.
And that makes me really concerned about what is in that popcorn.
But I mean movie theater popcorn's in there for weeks.
Oh, my God.
And it's also not concerning enough to you to stop eating it.
No, I ate like half the bag before I came into work this morning.
Okay, cool. Perfect. Yeah, when we were out the VMAC last week, you dropped some on the ground, picked it up, and said, don't judge me. And I was like, well, why would I?
I love that.
Then you told that story.
I love that about you.
Yeah, I don't mind eating
this
stuff
This story
off the
didn't
floor.
Even surprise me.
Yeah. I'll eat right off the floor. That doesn't even bother me at all.
I love that about you.
Yeah, why not?
Next question.
What's the problem? So it's been on the floor. Not every floor.
I mean, it's going into your stomach.
I mean,
all
we
the
could
acid
get Bob in here,
apart.
And he would just go off on you.
There are certain floors I would not eat off of. But, like, you know, that room we were in the Viz, basically a clean room, right?
Yep.
It was fine.
Yep. Next question.
What did I eat? Was it popcorn?
Yeah. No. You also ate the bruschetta that fell on the table.
Oh, yeah.
At the restaurant.
That was fun.
Yeah, and you just, like, scooped it right up.
Yeah, why not?
And, yeah, it was awesome.
Sure. Jerks, which is your favorite Lydia quote? Is it an eye for an eye leaves the whole world blind, or do you have a different favorite Lydia quote?
Interesting. Because iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another.
I remember Lydia used to say...
No, that's Proverbs. That's right. That's not right.
Many a slip twixt a cup and a lip.
Yes.
It's an old Lydia expression. She's been saying it for years.
My favorite one of hers is, if you first you don't succeed, pick yourself up and try again.
Wow. That's a good one.
Inspiring.
Lydia's inspiring.
This running bit is going to irritate me so much because, like, taking credit for my own work is really difficult, and now you're just, like, having me take credit for everybody.
Well, let us always meet each other with a smile, for the smile is the beginning of love.
When did Lydia first say that? It was a couple months ago? Yeah, she's been saying that.
I think
she
was
an intern.
Remember when
I said one fish, two fish, red fish, blue fish? That was a great moment for me.
I think that's from... That's from Redfish or One Fish, Two Fish. It's not to be confused with Fox and Socks. They're very similar.
Be faithful in small things because it's in them that your strength lies.
You miss 100% of the shots you don't take. She said that once.
Jerks, we now have Uncle Will, and we all know that Lydia is mom. But what family roles would the rest of you fall into?
Crazy Cousin Eddie Howdy. No doubt about it.
I see Howdy as sort of like, what was the extra kid they added to the Brady Bunch? Oliver? Like, remember when they had the 7th Brady kid who came in for the last season or two once they'd already jumped the shark? That's Howdy.
Grandpa is Kyle. Just Grandpa Kyle.
I'd picture more of myself kind of like Urkel, but like the popular version of him on the other side when he like became Stefan.
Huh.
More like Stefan.
Or in Full
which
House.
Stefan?
Who was the neighbor? Kimmy?
Kimmy Gibbler.
Kimmy Gibbler.
Or like
yeah, who
Cousin
just always
Cody
came over
in Step by Step. He
How
lived
about,
in the van in the driveway.
Six from Blossom.
Just keep pushing.
Is that one going
this.
Too deep? Sorry.
Blossom's closer than Brady Bunch. You're getting closer, though.
Warmer.
What would you and I be?
Apparently old. What can I tell you? Apparently people from like the Dick Van Dyke Show. Not the demo anymore.
What would me and Salk be? Come on, boys.
I don't think anybody wants to answer that. They're afraid back there.
I mean, Lydia's always said, if we have no peace, it's because we've forgotten that we belong to each other.
Next question.
These biblical quotes? What are you finding over
there? Oh, these are all mother quotes.
Oh, okay. Jerks, if you added a cutter to Edwin Diaz's repertoire, would he remind you of Mariano Rivera? No. Not at all.
No, that's a smooth delivery that is very repeatable.
Same thing over and over again. I don't see any comparison between them at all.
Who is it? Who is a comp?
Diaz?
Yeah, who's got a delivery like that as a closer?
Somebody who's like all arms and limbs everywhere.
Yeah.
I'll see if I can think of somebody.
Intense love does not measure, it just gives.
Arms and limbs is like Dennis Eckersley.
Yeah, a little bit. Although Eck was a little more, like, he was a little more to the side. I'll see if I can come up with somebody.
Next question.
The miracle is not that we do this work, but that we are happy to do it.
Jerks, what type of Cheetos do you prefer? Puffs, normal, or hot?
Puffs.
Normal.
Yeah. I don't like that flavor blast garbage. Just give me the normal.
Yep.
You know what I do like is putting normal Cheetos on hot dogs.
Oh, that sounds gross.
It's really good.
60% of the time, it works every time. From Lydia. That's one of the best. That's one of her best. I would agree.
No, that's not it. Billy Mike.
Other people saying that we are like the odd couple. Felix and Oscar. Is that one in your guys's? No? Okay.
I did that
Here's
show.
My question about you guys. Do you not know anything that happened before you? Like, I wasn't...
Don't start this.
Like, the odd couple was not my generation.
Seattle Sports started in 2009. Boy. You do not want to go down this road.
Oh, I think I do. You guys make it seem like anything that happened before you were 10 years old didn't happen.
The only thing I know about the odd couple really is that you the Bras once starred in an onstage performance.
True. You don't know any music from the 90s, nope. Any television from the 80s.
What?
And you make it... Not you, Lydia.
Not
the other two jamokes behind you. You make it seem like we're crazy. I know plenty of stuff that happened in the 50s and 60s. I wasn't there.
Yep. The important part is that it doesn't really matter. Like, that's more of what I believe. Like, I understand that those things existed. It just doesn't matter.
So you don't think Dick Van Dyke mattered?
Well, not only that, Howdy just doesn't think history matters. Oh. So, like, pop culture doesn't even register.
I got nothing for Howdy.
Well, I mean, like Lydia says, one of the greatest diseases is to be nobody to anybody.
I think what Lydia's always said is those who don't understand history are doomed to repeat it.
That's right.
Just like Howdy. Great quotes, Lydia. Keep them coming. We got to get out of here. We'll be back tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. Until then,
Let love is in the barn.
See everybody.
You cannot believe how excited we are.
Get to the chopper!